this is Ann Weller with the Triangle Radio Reading Service. During the next 30 minutes, I will be sharing nutrition information with you. This information is selected from the Nutrition Action Health Letter, a publication of the Center for Science in the Public Interest, based in Washington, D.C. The Center for Science in the Public Interest was founded in 1971 by three scientists who wanted to apply their academic training to the solving of social problems. The center staff conduct innovative research and other programs in health and nutrition and provide consumers with current information about their health and well-being. An independent, nonprofit consumer health group, the Center for Science in the Public Interest promotes honest food labeling and advertising, safer and more nutritious foods, and pro-health alcohol policies. The work of the Center for Science in the Public Interest is supported by Nutrition Action Health Letter subscribers and by foundation grants. It accepts no government or industry funding, and Nutrition Action Health Letter, which was first published in 1974, accepts no advertising. The following edition of Nutrition News is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Please use the information presented in this broadcast in consultation with your personal physician. In last month's segment of Nutrition News, I reported concerning nutrition messages that do not seem to register or stick with us consumers. Information in this report is included in the cover story of the June 2012 issue of Nutrition Action Health Letter. And it was authored by Director of Nutrition, Bonnie Lieben. I'll begin today's broadcast by completing Ms. Lieben's report. Another message that many consumers may not be getting is that we need to cut calories as we get older. Still eating the same size sandwich, plate of pasta, or bowl of cereal that you always have? Maybe that's why your waist is starting to spread out. Food lover that I am, the worst part about getting older is that I cannot eat as much as I used to without putting on weight, says Marion Nestle, professor of nutrition, food studies, and public health at New York University. I hate this, she adds, but the reality is that bodies change with age in ways that reduce calorie needs. Resting metabolism, that is, the rate at which we burn calories to keep our lungs, heart, kidneys, brain, and other organs running, our resting metabolism starts to drop appreciably at around age 40 in men and around age 50 in women. Muscle mass is replaced by fat, which burns fewer calories than muscle, and people generally become less active, notes Dr. Nestle. Exercise helps, but some of the change seems to be inevitable, she adds. I consider this the worst dirty trick about aging. There is one consolation, however. You are not alone. Every postmenopausal woman I know complains about how hard it is to maintain weight, says Dr. Nestle. It's no fun to feel as though you cannot even look at food without adding on pounds. This is one of the topics that Dr. Nestle addresses in her new book entitled Why Calories Count, From Science to Politics. The book is co-authored by Malden Nesheim and was published by the University of California Press this year, 2012. Dr. Nesheim is Professor Emeritus of Nutritional Sciences at Cornell University. We wrote the book in part to help everyone realize that we are all in this together, says Dr. Nestle. A final message that may be eluding us is that magnesium may lower your risk of diabetes. Do you want to avoid type 2 diabetes? Lose extra pounds, exercise daily, and limit sweets, especially sugary drinks. That's no surprise. But eating more magnesium-rich foods like leafy greens, beans, whole grains, nuts, and wheat bran may also help. Yet many people fall short of this. A typical woman gets only 250 milligrams of magnesium a day, while she should be getting about 320 milligrams daily. And a typical man gets only about 335 milligrams of magnesium daily, but he should be getting about 420 milligrams a day. We have very consistent evidence from population studies that higher magnesium status is associated with lower risk of type 2 diabetes, says Yiqing Song, assistant professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School. For example, in a meta-analysis of 7 studies that tracked more than 286,000 people for 4 to 17 years, the risk of diabetes was 15% lower for each 100 milligrams a day of magnesium that people reported eating. Now, 100 milligrams a day of magnesium is how much you'd get in 4 slices of whole wheat bread, 1 cup of beans, 1 quarter cup of most nuts, 1 half cup of cooked spinach, or half a cup of original all-bran cereal. Questions still remain, however, because those studies were not designed to prove cause and effect. That is, something else about people who eat magnesium-rich foods may lower their risk of diabetes. So, researchers have tried to give people magnesium to see if it lowers their blood sugar or makes their insulin work better. For example, a recent German study gave either magnesium at 365 milligrams a day or a placebo to 52 overweight people with insulin resistance. Now, if you're insulin resistant, your insulin does not work efficiently, and you have a higher risk of diabetes and of heart disease. After 6 months, the magnesium takers had lower fasting blood sugar levels and less insulin resistance than the placebo takers. Magnesium has not worked in all studies, though. We have inconsistent results from smaller trials, says Dr. Song. But they used different doses, and most of them were short-term and tested people who already have diabetes. We would like to do a larger and longer trial in people who do not have diabetes to see if magnesium supplementation prevents the disease. How might magnesium keep diabetes at bay? Well, some enzymes that regulate blood sugar need magnesium in order to work. And magnesium is also anti-inflammatory, says Dr. Song, and its antioxidant function may protect beta cells. Now, diabetes occurs when blood sugar rises because beta cells in the pancreas can no longer secrete enough insulin. In the meantime, we do not have direct and conclusive evidence to recommend that people take magnesium supplements for preventing type 2 diabetes, says Dr. Song. But it is safe to consume magnesium-rich foods like green leafy vegetables, which are beneficial for the prevention of many other chronic diseases. Now, in the March 2012 issue of Nutrition Action Health Letter, senior nutritionist David Shart reports about the benefits of fruit. You can't go wrong with fruit. In studies that look at the eating habits of large groups of people and the diseases that they get, those who consume more fruits and vegetables have a lower risk of heart disease and are less likely to have a stroke. It's a little trickier when you try to match individual fruits to specific diseases. But researchers are trying, with mixed success. And here is some of what they have learned. 20 or 30 years ago, people evaluated a fruit or vegetable by how much vitamin C it contained. Says Wei-Hai Liu, a fruit researcher at Cornell University in Ithaca, New York. Clearly, vitamins and minerals matter. Potassium, for example, may account for the lower risk of stroke in people who eat more fruits and vegetables because it lowers their blood pressure. But there are more than 8,000 bioactive compounds in fruits and vegetables, including the group known as polyphenols, notes Dr. Liu. And they may one day also help explain why eating those foods is good for you. At least that's what fruit researchers are banking on. Just keep in mind that many studies have not been confirmed by other researchers, and that early studies often don't pan out for a variety of reasons. For example, the studies are usually small, so the results are less reliable. One reason is that one or two people can change the outcome of the study. Researchers often receive funding or free juice from producers, which may subconsciously affect their results and their ability to obtain more funding. In this report, we have pointed out those studies whenever possible. And studies that come up empty are less likely to be published, so you usually only see the promising results. One more caution. If you decide to add fruit juice to your medicine cabinet in a serious way, be prepared to add a notch or two to your belt. That's because people tend not to compensate for the calories they drink by eating less food later. What's more, women in the Nurses' Health study who drank an average of 5 servings of fruit juice a week had an 18% greater risk of being diagnosed with diabetes than women in the study who averaged 1.5 servings of fruit juice a week. So here's a look at what researchers are finding out. During the early stages of a urinary tract infection, when you feel an urgency to urinate and then a burning sensation, what is happening is that little hairs on the E. coli bacteria, called fimbriae, are starting to stick to the inside of your bladder wall, says Amy Howell of Rutgers University in Chatsworth, New Jersey. However, these fimbriae don't bind all at one time, she explains. One hair will stick, then another, and then another, until suddenly all of them are cemented to the bladder cells, and it is too late to get them off. If you can dislodge the fimbriae before they're all attached, says Dr. Howell, there is a chance of preventing an infection. And that's where cranberries come in. They contain polyphenols called proanthocyanidins, or PACs, which prevent fimbriae from adhering to the bladder wall cells. When the PACs from cranberry juice are consumed, anti-adhesive compounds reach the bladder, where they can prevent the bacteria from attaching, or can weaken the attachment so that the flow of urine helps break the bacteria off the bladder wall and flushes them away, notes Dr. Howell, whose research is funded in part by the cranberry industry. Cranberry may help during the first 10 to 12 hours of an infection, when the bacteria are loosely bound, Dr. Howell adds. Can drinking cranberry juice or taking cranberry pills prevent urinary tract infections? In four studies reviewed by the Cochrane Collaboration, men and women who drank cranberry juice or took cranberry extract tablets for 6 months to a year were 34% less likely to have a urinary tract infection than those who took a placebo. Now, the Cochrane Collaboration is an international network of scientists who evaluate the evidence behind different healthcare treatments. However, since the positive Cochrane analysis, a large trial involving more than 300 students at the University of Michigan reported that cranberry juice was no better than a placebo in preventing a recurrence of urinary tract infections in women. Dr. Howell is skeptical of these findings. Among other things, the researchers did not verify that the women assigned to drink cranberry juice actually drank it regularly enough, such as by testing the women's urine for the presence of cranberry compounds, she says. College-age students are notorious for noncompliance in studies like this, and this was a long study. 6 months that they had to drink a cranberry juice several times a day. It would not be surprising if a lot of them didn't do it, but the researchers had no way of knowing. In contrast, Finnish children who were treated for a urinary tract infection, who were assigned to drink a cup of cranberry juice every day for a year, they did not have a choice, had fewer subsequent urinary tract infections, and spent fewer days on antibiotics than similar children given a placebo drink. An earlier study in Italian children found much the same. The bottom line on cranberry juice is that if you get recurring urinary tract infections, it's worth trying 8 to 10 ounces of cranberry juice cocktail or drink every day, but make sure that it is at least 25% cranberry juice, which is what the clinical trials have used. Now, a typical cranberry juice cocktail, like Ocean Spray, is 27% cranberry juice. Also, at 25% or more, Knudsen Light Cranberry, Lakewood Organic Light Cranberry Juice, and Old Orchard Naturals Cranberry. Tart cherries are used to make jam, preserves, and pies. Sweet cherries, like Bing and Rainier varieties, are grown primarily for fresh eating. While both types of cherries contain polyphenols, tart cherries have more. Most of the half dozen studies in humans have looked at whether tart cherry juice can relieve muscle pain and reduce the signs of inflammation after exercise. In the most dramatic one, 51 men and women participated in a 200-mile relay race from Mount Hood in Oregon to the Pacific Coast. Each runner averaged about 16 miles over the hilly course that crossed two mountain ranges. Now, for 7 days before and on the day of the race, half of the runners drank 20 ounces of tart cherry juice mixed with apple juice, while the other half of runners drank Kool-Aid fruit punch that matched the sugar concentration of the juice. At the conclusion of the race, the cherry apple juice drinkers reported significantly less muscle pain than the fruit punch drinkers, And in a British trial, 10 marathon runners who were told to drink 16 ounces a day of a cherry and apple juice blend for 5 days before a race, on the day of the race, and for 2 days after the race, did not report less muscle soreness than 10 runners who drank a fruit-flavored placebo. But their bodies showed signs of less inflammation, and they recovered their muscle strength faster. Now, in a study funded by a cherry juice manufacturer and conducted by researchers with equity in the company, tart cherry juice also appeared to help people who were doing strength training. 14 male college students drank either 24 ounces of tart cherry juice mixed with apple juice or 24 ounces of black cherry flavored Kool-Aid for 4 days before and for 4 days after doing bicep building exercises. These exercises were so strenuous that they produced pain and a temporary loss of strength in the arm. The young men reported less pain, and their temporary muscle loss was less when they were drinking the cherry apple juice. Drinking cherry apple juice will cost you, though. 16 to 24 ounces have roughly 300 to 400 calories. While it is possible that less juice would have worked as well, none of the studies looked at that. Nor have any studies looked at people who were doing less strenuous exercise. Other juices may also help muscles recover from strenuous exercise, says David Neiman, director of the Human Performance Lab at the North Carolina Research Campus in Kannapolis, North Carolina, a private public venture co-founded by the chairman of Dole Foods. I do not believe that the polyphenol profile in tart cherries is superior to that of other fruits and vegetables, he notes. Just be prepared to drink for a while. A 1 to 3 week supplementation period prior to heavy exertion appears necessary for measurable effects, says Dr. Neiman. So, the bottom line on tart cherries: if you're a serious athlete, you might consider drinking tart cherry juice to see if it helps you recover. Just make sure you can afford the extra calories. In 2008, on the Martha Stewart Living TV show, pomegranate promoter Linda Resnick declared that pomegranate juice is the magic elixir of our age and of all ages. And we know that it helps circulation, it helps Alzheimer's, and what it does for prostate cancer is amazing. Resnick and her husband Stewart launched the pomegranate juice craze 10 years ago with their POM Wonderful brand. Since then, they have invested more than $30 million of their own money, into research about the juice's potential health benefits. They have not been shy about promoting their juice with aggressive advertising that earned them a reprimand in 2005 from the Better Business Bureau and a lawsuit in 2010 by the Federal Trade Commission. The Federal Trade Commission accused the company of making false and unsubstantiated claims that their products will prevent or treat heart disease, prostate cancer, and erectile dysfunction. The Federal Trade Commission is asking the federal courts to restrict POM's health claims and advertising to only those approved by the Food and Drug Administration. The billionaire Resnicks are fighting back, insisting that they have a First Amendment right to speak out, and charging that the Federal Trade Commission is wasting taxpayer resources and going after them. The case is mired in the courts. So what is the evidence for pomegranate juice? Well, rising PSA, or prostate-specific antigen scores, Rising scores slowed down in 46 men who had been treated for prostate cancer with surgery or radiation. When they drank 6 to 8 ounces of pomegranate juice every day for up to 33 months. A rising prostate-specific antigen score may indicate a growing prostate cancer. And when blood from the men was mixed with prostate cancer cells in test tubes, it slowed down the proliferation and sped up the death of the cells. But there was no control group, so there was no way to tell whether the men's PSA levels would have risen at the same pace without the pomegranate juice. A follow-up study in 180 similar men, comparing two different doses of pomegranate juice with the placebo, has been completed, but the results have not been made public yet. As far as cardiovascular disease is concerned, 8 ounces of pomegranate juice every day for up to 18 months did not slow down the hardening of the arteries in men and women at risk for coronary heart disease. And concerning erectile dysfunction, men in their 40s with mild to moderate erectile dysfunction fared no better after 1 month of drinking 8 ounces of pomegranate juice every day than they did after a month of drinking a placebo. So, the bottom line on pomegranate juice is that good human studies have not demonstrated the benefits of pomegranate juice against prostate cancer, heart disease, or erectile dysfunction. Pretty much every berry that we have studied, that is blueberries, strawberries, blackberries, and cranberries, has improved learning and memory in aging rats, says psychologist Barbara Schuchtehale of the U.S. Department of Agriculture Human Nutrition Research Center on Aging at Tufts University in Boston. But it's too early to know whether berries or grape or berry juice does the same in people. We've reached the conclusion of this month's segment of Nutrition News. The show will be rebroadcast this week on Friday at 11 p.m. and on Saturday at 3 p.m. Please join me for the next edition of Nutrition News, which will air on Wednesday, October 3rd, 2012. I'm Ann Weller, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service, and I hope that you have enjoyed the show. This program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience, and it is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. So long until next month.